Okay, so if you have questions, you can still feel free to submit them on the via the QR code, or if something comes to mind, just raise your hand and I'll repeat the question so everybody can hear it. Troy, thank you so much. Those were really encouraging and great biographies, but also great application for where we are today and the things that we have going on in our lives. First question, you addressed this a number of different times, but I'll give you you can try again. What would you say, because this was asked by a few different people, so what would you say to Christians who are tempted to exfiltrate or to leave from the West Coast to other places like Idaho or Montana?
Well, if I were feeling spicy, this is not very kind, but I would say what the British Navy used to say, that when the ship is sinking, it's the rats that flee. Now, if that's too harsh, I would say there are good reasons to leave. No, it's not that bad. Okay, I'm a nicer pastor than that. I won't say that again. There are good reasons to leave. There are good reasons to leave. There are good... we can watch, some of these stories. The way I've painted them is to show how Seattle should look at its community. But it can go other ways. You can look at Patrick's life as a leaving, right? He left his family. I described it as him returning, but it can be a leaving, too. The world has been conquered by people going to hard fields, right? And the world has, as I showed, been conquered by staying in a hard field. The danger is running towards comfort, right? Remember, Paul ends his life saying, I fought the good fight. So is that your vision of life? Where am I fighting? You can fight a battle by going away. You can fight a battle by staying. The one thing you can't do is say, I give up the fight. And that would be the difference.
That's very helpful. Related question. So if you don't have a specific call like Patrick, so he leaves because he's got a specific call, do you make your decision about where you should be based on what's harder? I'm paraphrasing the question, but I think
that's good. Do we have to be sadists? I get it.
Yeah, exactly. Do we have to all be like Troy and
come suffer with me on the beach in California? No, don't. Man, I could have really messed up this speech if you're like, man, you know what the pastor told me is whatever is the worst of all options, do that in life. No, that's not it. Our danger is not comfort. Our danger is idolatry. I like a hot tub. I like being comfortable. That's not a problem. One day I might even put one in our house. We're going to seek some comfort there. I have a mattress on my bed. It's okay to be comfortable. That's not the problem. The problem is always idolatry, and this is always just, you want to know what you mean, look at the Ten Commandments and apply them to life. Do I have something that I'm seeking more than God? And that's usually the problem. If you can love God and sit on your lazy boy, amen, go for it. I would. I got a nice couch up there that I put the feet back on. I have no problem with that. And you could do that in life as well. Your calling is not to say what's harder. Your calling is to say what's faithful. Where does God want me? And most of the time in life, God makes it clear, usually through the very the mouth of your pastor or your family or your dad. It's often, or just, somebody says, hey, I have a job for you, and you're like, all right, I need a job. So you find out what to do. Is that enough of an answer?
That's great. I'll just add on to that. I think one of the tests is, you talked about earlier, contentment, mm-hmm. right? So if you are... there's a difference between contentment and complacency. So if you're content and you're able to give thanks where you are, that might be a good sign that that's right where God wants you to be.
Yes.
But if you look at your life and you realize, I'm actually not content, and even though it's comfortable, I'm not really giving thanks, yeah. That's a warning sign. Because giving thanks is the alternative to idolatry.
My oldest son went to NSA, and his essay that he wrote to get in is why everybody should move to California. Now he's about to graduate, and he's writing a paper on while he's never going to leave California. And one of the verses he and I think about, and Paul does mean it in a broader sense, but to not seek to leave the station that God saved you in. You know, he's talking specifically to slavery in that verse. Don't let it bother you if you were saved as a slave. You don't need to get violent to get out of slavery. But there is just a sense of all of life. Where God calls you is often where he wants you. You know, so if you have lived your life, if your parents have lived their life in Seattle, it's probably a good place to stay. You know, I mean, I often tell my parishioners that the Bible talks about us. It says that the kingdom of God is going to stretch from the Euphrates to Santa Cruz, ends of the earth. But I'm on the end of the earth. That's where I am. It's talking about me. Right? So I know I'm supposed to be there.
Much more broad question. With so much history that we could read or could study, for somebody that wants to is listening to you and talking about the books you've read and these men that we should be and women that we should be reading about and growing and understanding, where do you start? How do you get going? Thoughts on that?
Oh man, I think you should start with the good stuff. I mean, a bit like that is which side of the pool do we jump into first? I don't know. It's big, and just get in there and swim. It's wonderful. Again, this is my favorite thing to do in life. My favorite thing is to read history. My second favorite one is to tell you all about it afterwards. And this is I'm an autodidact, right? You just teach yourself these things. God is working in thousands of places through thousands of faces. And so you can find richness almost in any door into the history. There's some better authors than others. And you can probably get some recommendations, and I can give you some too. But, you know, certain books, my wife and I read together a lot, and some of the books I love, she hasn't. Some of the books she hasn't, I love. So there is a bit of psychology about this. But God has made a rich world, and you know, it's just fun to get out into it wherever it is. You should start. I can recommend some books if you want to talk later. If these moments in history interest you, there's a lot of good stuff out there. But you know, you can go so many places. With my church, we do a history conference kind of every October. We call it All Saints October, and we just look at these stories, and we've gone everywhere. We've gone from the 20th century back to the first century, and there's so much richness in there, everywhere.
On the practical side, how would you encourage somebody that wants to get started on this kind of thing? How do you jump into the pool? And I think particularly of you're busy with family, you're busy with work, you feel like there's not a lot of time. What are some just practical suggestions to get going?
Yeah, gosh. We've read a number of books at my dinner table. Those are always fun. They have some short ones. Years ago, he just did a great job at it. I can't remember it. What's that little book by Trials and Triumph? The ones at your table. I mean, that's just a great place to start for no other reason than in one little 300-page book, he goes through Landina, I think, I can't remember who's first, all the way until C.S. Lewis. You know, it's just wonderful because you get a scope of the whole field, and you're like, where do I like the field the best? So that's great. Reading to your kids is probably the best way to get into reading, bar none. Often we feel we're too busy, and then we have kids, and then we feel, I got to read to them. I would say that's been the story about half my congregation. I recommend start with the kids' books, and then go from there. Yeah.
Good. On books, what is your recommendation to read on the life of Athanasius?
Okay. He wrote A Story of His Times, which you obviously can read. And then there's a number of other people, and I'm pretty sure you can find some amazing things, but they're not very short. But there's a book out. Oh, I'm having trouble remembering the author. Kruger, I think. It's called The Patient Fervent of the Church. It's a wonderful book. It's written by a man who comes from the Quaker tradition, so you just have to understand his tradition because he's pretty nasty towards Constantine or anything like that. But that book is just, if you want a book that preaches the power of patience, I mean, that's just a wonderful book, the Patient Ferment of the Church. But that's not just about Athanasius. That's about that whole first 300 years. and just about how patience can conquer empires. It's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. If you get, I know it's not his biography, but there's an introduction to it. If you get, On the Incarnation, there's the one with the C.S. Lewis introduction, you know. And that also, usually, I think that one has his letter on the Psalms at the end of it. There's a nice little introduction if you want a really short one in there as well. You probably could think of some more, but I don't know them now.
And still related, if people are wanting to read the works of these men that you've been talking about, you mentioned a number of their books or writings, like On the Incarnation. Can you give, and you mentioned a couple others for the other men as well, but can you just list through for each of these saints what would be one thing to read
of their own writings? You can just get the Penguin Classics on early Christian writings. You'll read Clement the First, probably the first thing written by a Christian that's not part of the Bible. It's fun to read. And then I think it goes all the way through Everastus, where he describes Polycarp's death. That would be good, because you can read their writings and what was written about them. Athanasius, On the Incarnation, by far is the best. Augustine, if you want his biography, The Confessions is just a wonderful book to just massage your soul. It's just a beautiful book. It doesn't do his whole life. It just does his conversion, and then he gets into the philosophy of time. But really, I think most church liturgies probably were affected by what he wrote there, and it's just beautiful. But there are better books on him and shorter ones as well. And then Patrick, his Confessio is really a magical little book. It is super short. You could probably read it in a night if you're reading fast or at a dinner table. It's a magical book, and just even how it preserved in time. Patrick dies on the island, starts there, as far as he knows, is the only Christian on the island. He's alone. He's not sure he's ever going to see family. Europe's falling apart. He doesn't even know who he could go see anymore. They might all be dead. And he writes his Confessio, and no one knows actually, how did he get preserved? He's just writing it and just saying, well, I think the world's fallen apart, and here I am. And it's kind of like a letter in a bottle, that book. Somebody's out there. So I really recommend that one. It's just a magical little book. And then Gregory, his book on leadership is really fun. It does have a weird part in the middle, but the parts that aren't weird. It's just great pastoral advice. It's just the kind of stuff that is just eminently quotable. If you just want little quotes you give to yourself, the best place to be to succeed is where you are with what you have. Just great. Just, I need that. Okay. So, yeah.
Follow-up question here.
I suppose there could be like a written email that went out to the church with all these book recommendations for
them. Yes, I can nerd out on that and have way fun. Yeah.
Troy will send something out.
Yes. Okay.
On Gregory, mm-hmm. How can a Christian take himself lightly while also wanting to be like Gregory, sleeping only 3 hours a night? how do you do that and not take yourself too seriously? And
ooh,
and also just how do you do that?
my wife, I used to tell her I wanted to be like John Calvin, who I slept 4 or 5, and then and she goes, he died at like 50. Oh yeah, that's where I am. How do you take yourself lightly? I don't know. We've found, and I know you know this statement in your church, if you want something done, give it to somebody who's busy. God tends to make your schedules. I don't choose to have a busy schedule. It always seems to find me. I feel like I'm Gregory running out of the city, and it's always pulling me back. C.S. Lewis has that wonderful quote somewhere, that those who learn much aren't waiting for good conditions, because good conditions never arrive. You just take the time you have. And as for not taking yourself too seriously, most of the time you learn knowledge and you realize what an idiot you are. I don't know. It's kind of knowledge is that kind of thing that that is really good at popping your bubble, at least if you're honest with it. Of course, Paul does warn that knowledge is the only thing that can puff us up. I don't know. Then get married. Your wife will pop it for you. So.
Introducing a new character for you to talk about for just a minute. Thoughts on Joan of Arc and specifically her visions of the saints who guided her. And what do we think of that as Protestants?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Joan of Arc. I do think her trial was nasty and vicious. And her reading her trial is pretty amazing, and she makes some amazing statements. One of the things she was accused of is believing that God was talking to her, because that shows that she was a witch, and believing that she knew that she was a Christian, because anybody that knows they're a Christian is sinning with presumption. You know, those were two of the things made against her. To the first charge, she might have been crazy. But to the second charge, this is a charge that Protestants have been accused of, that if we assurance of faith is the sin of presumption, right? That's like a 5,000-year-old charge by the Roman Catholics to Protestants. And her statements there are golden at her trial. So when she says God told me never to wear pants or never to wear a skirt again, I think that's weird. But she is. It's also hard to even know exactly what she believed before her trial. We almost have no records of that. So I do think, this is my own, I have never read a book on this, so take it, it's probably wrong. But I do think she's one of those people that have been buffed for history. Make sense? I mean, just to put it in context, maybe I'll tell the story a little longer. 100-year war. King of England invaded France, was able to conquer it. They did that because, if you remember, first the French invaded England, 1056, Norman conquest, right? And William, okay, I'm sorry, but William the Bastard didn't like his name, and so he took over England so he could be called William the Conqueror, right? Much better name. His wife was Matilda. She was related to King Alfred the Great, and so he thought he had a place at the kingdom throne, and he wanted to give up being a duke to be a king. Woohoo! I would want to be a king, too. Takes over. His ancestors then say, well, why did we get kicked out of France? We want to go take over France. And so they go and try and take over France, and they're successful. If you ever watch the Shakespeare play Henry V, that's the beginning of the 100-year war. Joan of Arc's at the end of it, almost 114 years later. And she comes in, and at least the stories told about her after she died, when they were trying to make her a saint, they might just be misinformation. But that she was told by God that England or that France could beat the English. Now, the English were pretty nasty at that time. They had been pretty bad in France, and so they deserved what they got. But I do think they made her up. Make sense? Because they needed something to unify her, and the king was a wuss. And so Joan of Arc was just a better option. She was captured. She was put on trial. You do have records of that. And her defense of being sure that she could know she was saved is beautiful. And that's probably the end of it.
All right. There you go. For moms, how do you balance, this is going back to the talk on Monica. How do you balance instructing your children, like what we read about in Proverbs, the law of your mother hanging about your neck, but not being a virago, as you described it.
Yeah. Solomon says that wisdom is knowing the rhythm of things, the timing of things, right? There's a time for this, there's a time for that. There's a time for this, there's a time for that. There is definitely a time for my wife to walk around the house with a wooden spoon in her back pocket. It's great. Be a virago. Spank the kids. You know, that's great. And then there's a time when we need to stop doing that. And that's really what we're talking about. We're talking about an older boy who's... you know, she is still trying to toddler, you know, and he's out in the world. It didn't work. Your last ministry that God is going to give you in this world most likely is prayer. Probably won't be able to drive at some point, and your kids are going to take away your license. You might be homebound at some point. It will be even hard to go to church. You might even be in a hospital room and not able to get out. And throughout all of that, there's one ministry that never leaves you, the ability to pray. And it's that where we're all heading. We're all heading to that ministry. And so the encouragement is just start now with it. I'm going to preach on Sunday here. I'm grateful, and we're going to talk about prayer. So... this is the ministry we're called to, right?
Going back to the first talk, I think it was the first talk, on singing the Psalms. Mm-hmm. Kind of related to the reading question, but how do you start in your family practicing singing the songs. We do it here at church. If I take that home, where do you start? And then how do you also, maybe in your family, there's not a lot of psalm singing that's going on. How do you encourage that? How do you get that going?
Yeah, that's probably a question for your pastor. But the Hatcher family is musical. God bless you all. I'm anti-musical. I see a note on the page, and I'm usually over here for it. And my wife says, "You're a terrible singer," and she's right. She speaks truth. She's a prophet of truth. We're not a musical family, and then somehow God's been kind to my kids. They're better than I am. If you were talking about how to work long and not take yourself too seriously, you could be a Martin and try and sing. We sound terrible. But we sing at our dinner table. We need to do it, and I know there's a spiritual connection. It's Reagan's economics and church life, trickle-down effect. If the pastor's not doing it at home, nobody in the church is going to be doing it. So, we just get good and humble and we sing together. So, you want me to do a solo for you real fast? You can see. I don't know. Going back to the first statement, there's just something about being headstrong and a little bit of a nut and not giving up on things. That's how you do most things in life. Not that I sound better, but, we're singing psalms. We do it.
That's great. Do we have time for a few more? I can't remember what our timetable is here. Can you talk a little bit on knowing that? So the question here is comment on the knowing history of the early church, particularly as Protestants, who we tend to stop with church history at the Reformation, and the Reformers clearly valued the early church.
Yeah.
Talk about that and maybe the necessity of us.
You're talking about going backwards, in a modern time.
Basically, what we're doing in this conference is going back, but talk more about why we're, you talked about this over and over again, but just maybe summarize, why is it really important for us to be looking all the way back there?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Because one of the things we start believing is what Roman Catholics say about history, and it's not true. Right. This is one of the chief arguments that the Reformers were up against, that the Roman Catholic Church has never changed. And the Reformers said, yes, it has. Most of the things they were fighting, they were saying, were about 300 years old. They weren't going back. And so one of the things we forget is, like, John Calvin was probably the smartest patristic scholar. That means the early church fathers, that was alive at the time. So when we look back, you're actually seeing something more similar than you think, right? We shouldn't think, and this happens a lot. My students think this a lot. Why am I looking at Roman Catholics? Is there a secret church on the side that was surviving the whole time, and that's what I'm part of? It's not the case. When we say we're Reformed, we might say it better as we're the great restorers of church history. That's what Calvin thought of himself as doing. It's what Luther thought of himself as doing. They were looking in the past to find where they had gone astray. They weren't looking at the past and saying, we need to do something totally new. We are recovering a tradition in the church. We're not doing something, revolutionary and faddish. Read it with that way. And you're going to hit problems. I think at probably half the reading I do, I've taught medieval history longer than any other subject I've taught. And you're going to read a large part of Roman Catholic authors, and they'll tell you, we've always meant this, or we didn't always mean that, or this actually means that. And it's publicity. I wouldn't buy it. You're looking at your people. It's your family. Now, there's another lesson you can learn on that, too, and it's a good one to remember. I told you about Gregory. I was just telling a friend of mine that Gregory is messy. John Calvin said he was the last of the good popes. He did crazy things in his life. I was telling you how he was so offended that in his little commune that anybody would have a private property, that when one of their monks died, he found a single gold piece in his bed, and he decided that this man could not be a Christian, and so threw his body on the dung heap outside in Rome and did three sermons on sending him to hell. So I cleaned up people a little, but but it's good to read those stuff because, you need to realize that your parents are messy, right? It's good to remember. Your parents are messy. God has had the worst idea ever in building a church out of the lumber called sinners, But it's been succeeding. And that's one of the most amazing things about church history. Everybody's messy. And the one thing we need to get past is that perfectionism, like, but we're not. Oh, you know, you'll figure out you are. And if you don't, God will give you kids and they'll tell you you are. Right? And we need that attitude also with the early church. Yes, it made mistakes. And yes, there are people. That's our fathers and mothers.
Wonderful. Okay, one more question. So going back to kind of where we started in the Q&A, but being in a state like Washington or California, we can be seeing that things are going crazy. We can see that the rebellion against God around us. And at the same time, we still live in America, and we have all this comfort. We have all these, we still have rights. We don't have people banging down our door yet. So how do you be where you are, speak up, be like Patrick, and not grow complacent? Don't kid yourself that just by living in a blue state, you're doing that. Does that make sense?
No.
Okay, let me try again. It's by planting roots, being that nut that decides to stay, mm-hmm. We still live in relative comfort. Mm-hmm. Especially historically speaking. Mm-hmm. How do you not confuse being, by just be, not think that just by being here, you're doing that work?
Yes. Okay.
Because you can grow complacent even in a blue state.
Yeah, right. Is the question, is how do I know I'm doing enough where I am? Is that what the question is? Okay. Because the talks have been, the chief grace is just to continue. I want to see my kids. I want to see my grandkids. I'm not going to go away. The warning has been, you've got to be more like Jonah than like Lot. You've got to speak up. And the best way we can do all of these things, the best way, is by being a part of a church. Because I have blind spots, you have blind spots, I don't know if I'm doing it right, but churches are these wonderful creations, these organic creations of many different skills and levels, and they end up doing things together. I have been blessed in my church to find myself in situations I never would have thought I needed to be in, and getting blessings from being in them. We've just had people show up, and our church has started a school, and I spend a lot of time nurturing that school. And then I had someone in my church say, "Have you heard what's going at the public school board meetings?" And I hadn't. And she said, "Would you come?" And I never wanted to go to that because I got my own school. We have a community of sanity, and they're crazy. And so I went to the board meeting because I liked her, and I wanted to help her. And we went there, and there is a brown beret. I don't know if you know what those are. A violent group that's wanting to make California part of Mexico again, and he was speaking, and he's as a community leader, and he's a bully up there. And all of a sudden, I find myself writing letters to him and speaking in public at these things. Did I know I needed to speak in public at a public school? I didn't, but I found myself in that situation. And why was I there? Because I was in a church, and someone said, "Hey, there's a need over here. How do we know what to do?" We can be community. That your community, if you're saying, "I'm here and I'm available," will often put you in the situations you need to be in. So listen to your pastor when he says, "Hey, we need to work on this." Great. I might have a blind spot. And then if somebody else is part of, your Republican Central Committee and say, "There's something crazy over there. Why don't you show up?" It's fun to be in a place and say, "Thus saith the Lord." You might have cats thrown at you. You might have people convert. You never know. It's good.
That's great. Thank you, Troy, very much.
Yeah.